the Meet the Candidates Forum, sponsored by the Buffalo Association of Black Journalists. And at any time I kind of stray off things, it's because I've been on vacation all week, and it's kind of hard to get into the groove, but I'm sure I can count on you to keep me on the straight and narrow. Tonight we are going to meet and hear what the candidates for Erie County District Attorney have to say. And I will get to the ground rules, first of all, right away. First of all, you saw the candidates. They drew numbers for seating order, and that's how they drew them, 1, 2, 3, 4. Number four is on your far right. Number one is on your far left. Candidates will draw numbers for seating order, 1 minute opening statements left to right. As Rod Watson just reminded me, I want to thank Perchfield Penny for graciously allowing us to use their auditorium tonight for our forum. The candidates will get 1 minute opening statements from your left to your right, meaning they're going to start with number 1, 2, 3, 4, and the closing statements in the reverse order, 4, 3, 2, 1. When they're asked the questions, they'll get 2 minutes to answer, and if there is a personal attack, they will get 30 seconds to rebut any direct attacks. Questioners can follow up if they don't feel their question was answered. First question, first candidate, second question, we'll get that straightened out. Questions will be submitted by the audience, and we have some folks who have some cards for if you have any questions that you would like for us to ask of the candidates, fill those cards out. And I'm sure at some point very shortly we will have members of the BABJ with those cards. All you got to do is ask for them. Now, we are first going to introduce the candidates. We have Acting District Attorney Michael Flaherty, number two. Endorsed Democrat John Flynn Jr., number three. Former Assistant District Attorney Mark Satcha, competing in the Democrat primary, number four. And the Republican endorsed candidate Joseph Traynor, number one. And I will also point out that Mr. Traynor and Mr. Flynn are competing in the conservative primary coming up also. Our panel of BABJ panelists. First, we have Eva Doyle from the Buffalo Criterion. In the middle, Shante Perkins, who is a TV producer here in Buffalo. And on the far end here, my colleague Claudine Ewing from WGRZ-TV. So I think we've taken care of all of the ground rules. And so first, from that end to this end, we will ask you to give your 1 minute opening statements. Thank
you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Traynor, and I am a candidate for the Erie County District Attorney's Office this year. I am a 28-plus year retired veteran of the United States Air Force JAG Corps. I was a full-time active duty attorney all those years. I had the opportunity to prosecute virtually every type of case under the sun, from tragic child sexual abuse cases as my first case, major felony, right up through working on the international crimes against humanity case that brought Saddam Hussein and his former regime to justice. I attended the University of Notre Dame undergrad and also Notre Dame Law School, where I earned my law degree. As part of my military service, I deployed to the Middle East 3 times and was combat wounded and decorated for valor. Pardon me. Throughout my career, I have been blessed with the opportunity to lead multiple legal offices. I have, in essence, served as district attorney in many assignments. I have mentored, led, and trained multiple attorneys.
Oh, and we have a one-minute bell.
Sir, thank you.
Harold McNeil is handling the bell. Mr. Flaherty.
Good evening. As you know, my name is Michael Flaherty, and this is such a great venue. In fact, I live very close to here, and the church I attend is right across the street. My wife and I have 2 daughters, and before they were born, we decided that we wanted to raise our children in a diverse city and send our kids to the Buffalo Public Schools, where they are both enrolled, one's in 7th grade and the other's in 8th grade. And that decision is something I am very proud of. I'm very happy to be a member, or very proud to be a member of the City of Buffalo, and I look forward to watching them grow with their friends and the experiences that they are getting through the schools and the friends that they've made here. For the last 8 months, I have served as your district attorney, and you've already seen the changes I've made in that short time. I have a new leadership team in place. I have a standalone narcotics unit. I have a public integrity unit. I have a community outreach program, of which I'm very proud. And I've increased our minority hiring.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Al. It's an honor to be here tonight, and I would be remiss if I couldn't take the opportunity here. I don't get the opportunity that often in front of a big crowd here to thank my wife and my family for all that they have done for me and all that they have doing for me in the future in this campaign. I love you all very much, and I thank you all for your support in this endeavor. As Al mentioned, I am the endorsed Democratic candidate for Erie County District Attorney. I have been an attorney now for over 20 years, serving in a multiple facet operation of the law, from being a former judge in Tonawanda and acting Buffalo City Court judge, to serving my country, being a JAG officer, where I'm currently a commander in the U.S. Navy Reserves, to being a town attorney in Tonawanda, an attorney in private practice, and a former homicide prosecutor in the DA's office. I believe that I have the legal experience and the leadership capabilities that serve me best for this office.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha.
Thank you, Al. I better mention my wife now since...
Better, Mark. Better.
Thank you, Lynn. My name is Mark Satcha, and I'm going to cut to the quick here. I'm in this race because I felt it was my civic responsibility to help repair a damaged and broken DA's office, a DA's office that was damaged and broken by Frank Sedita, Steve Pigeon, and Mike Flaherty. We have a good system, and there are good people in the system, but Sedita, Pigeon, and Flaherty are motivated by one thing, political ambition. And not by public service. I am a public servant. For 22 and a half years, I worked my way up in the DA's office. I was their superior at the DA's office. I tried many cases. I probably have tried more cases than the other three candidates have tried together. I've done more investigations. But not only that, when it came time to stand up, I'm the one who stood up to do the right thing.
Thank
and
you.
I'm the only one who did it.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha. Personal attacks of all three, but the... I feel kind of funny here in front of four attorneys, and I have to make a decision here, but it's when it's a personal attack one-on-one. So we're going to go to our first questioner, Claudine Ewing. With WGRZ-TV.
So our first question goes to Mr. Traynor. What are the main problems facing the district attorney and Erie County? You're not there, but what would you do to address those issues, and what are your plans to address them in the future?
Thank you for the question. The first thing that I would do is basically take stock of the expertise of the people that are in the office to find out what their responses are to these particular, questions. But more than that, what I would do is I would run the office in military fashion, which basically means you have good people, you make sure that they are trained, they are equipped, they are supported, you give them the mission, you give them your philosophy, and you get out of the way and you let them do their job. You trust your people, and if they need help, you are there to help them. If they need to be held accountable, you hold them accountable. And that's the best way to run the district attorney's office, in my view and in my experience.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Mr. Flaherty, your answer?
To which question? What was the question, please?
The question had to do with what are the main problems facing the district attorney's office. You are already there, so what have you done so far to address them? And are there any changes you can make in the future?
Well, the changes I've already made addressed what I perceive to be issues. I recognize that I wanted the leadership team to have more responsibility under me than it had under the previous administration, and so I've implemented that. You know, my first choice for first assistant was Donna Milling, who has worked with me for over 20 years, and she is the first assistant district attorney, which means after me, she is in charge, and she runs the office when I'm not there. And she brings a great perspective and also a perspective from the minority community, which is so important to me that our office reflect the diversity of the community. I also recognized in the most recent years that the issue of the opioid epidemic has gripped our community, and so we reinstituted a standalone narcotics unit to combat that. I also saw that we needed to get the assistant district attorneys out into the community to not only talk to the community about what we do, but to learn from members of the community about what we can do better. And in fact, rather than be at the Board of Block Clubs meeting tonight, I have an assistant district attorney there on my behalf. And I've also want the office to reflect the diversity of the community, so I've made a concerted effort to increase our minority hiring, which I'm already pleased to say we've implemented and will continue to aggressively pursue. So with that, I think that the results that I've produced of the first 8 months speak for themselves. I'm very proud of the accomplishments we've had, and I think we're headed in the right direction.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Flaherty, Mr. Flynn, your turn, sir.
Yes, sir. The fact of the matter is that the past 8 months of Michael's tenure cannot erase the past 8 years of the previous administration. The fact of the matter is that Michael was, in fact, the first deputy district attorney who was second in command. And during that time, they disbanded the Narcotics Bureau as a standalone bureau in the office. They did not prosecute corruption cases. They had an abysmal diversity policy in the office, and still today do not have one African-American investigator in the office. There is a crisis of confidence in the Erie County DA's office, a crisis of public trust in that office from law enforcement to the legal community. And that is the first thing that I'm going to fix once I become DA.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Personal attack. Mr. Flaherty, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Frank Sedita is no longer district attorney. I am, and I've already put my own stamp on the office. And as to crisis and confidence, I don't know what community and law enforcement personnel you're talking about. If you'd like to explain, please do.
Oh, sure. I'm talking about the law enforcement personnel who all endorsed me for DA. The fact of the matter is that every law enforcement PBA out there that has made an endorsement in this race has all endorsed me for DA, which includes the Buffalo PBA, City of Tonawanda, Town of Tonawanda, Amherst, and Cheektowaga.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha, it's your turn to answer the question.
Al, I agree with John about just about everything he just said. Mike is well aware that he was the first assistant when Frank Sedita did away with the Narcotics Bureau, which I used to be the head of back in the 90s during the crap epidemic. And I think that Mike should be open about the fact that is the truth and that he did nothing when Frank Sedita did away with the Narcotics Bureau. And in fact, Mike on his website claims it's the first time. Mike, that's false. You claim on your website it's the first time there was ever a narcotics unit. That's absolutely false, and you know it. And I ask you today, in front of all these people, to take it back and to change your website. Now, on another subject, Al, since this year there have been 30 homicides in the city of Buffalo. Do you know how many have been solved by his homicide unit, his 16 investigators, and the Buffalo police? Three. You know how many have been solved since February? One. There's been 27 homicides. The clearance rate in Buffalo, I looked today, is the worst in the country. And Mr. Flaherty wants to say that he's proud of this, that this is a good result. Maybe part of the problem is Mike never tried anything. Mike was never a trial lawyer. And in fact, Mike really wasn't a supervisor until the point his best friend became DA. And Mike was his campaign chairman. And that's how normally you become DA. But this is a year where we have an opportunity to pick the best person, to pick the, to do it on a merit rather than on some political formula which results in people like Steve Pigeon, Mike, manipulating the way the DA's office is run.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha. Mr. Flaherty, again, you have 30 seconds to rebut.
Just 30 seconds?
30 seconds.
If you can.
It's very difficult. Thank you for answering the question posed to you, Mr. Satcha. Commissioner Durenda isn't here to respond to the claim about the clearance rate of murders in Buffalo, but you can take that up with him. I can tell you that so far this year, we've received convictions in over 30 homicide cases, which is twice what we did last year. I am not my predecessor. I am my own man. I've established the office the way I see fit. I am going to continue to lead the office the way I see fit, and I'm very proud of the people who are working for me and with me.
Thank you.
Can I respond to that? If the media is interested, I'll provide them with the facts.
Mark, that was not a personal attack. Okay, our next question. Shanti Perkins, and your current question first person goes to Mr. Flaherty. Okay. Sorry.
Okay, Mr. Flaherty. How will your varied experiences in and outside the practice of law affect your ability to be the next district attorney, and how has your experience as a courtroom litigator prepared you to direct scores of trial attorneys who prosecute serious crimes in the district attorney's office?
Well, the first part of the question is, I did serve as the first assistant for 7 years, which gave me a very, very good overview as to how all the office ran. So when I came in, I was able to have my idea about what needed to be changed, what we could do better, and I've already implemented those changes. In terms of supervising prosecutors, I have taught trial technique and trial strategy in different courses, both at the state level for NPTI, the New York Prosecutors Training Institute, and the national level for the National College of District Attorneys. I was consulted when I was first assistant on a regular basis about charging decisions, trial decisions, and I was able to use my 20 years of experience working on some of the most notorious cases that occurred during my tenure as an ADA, put that to good use, and I will continue to put that to good use. But more importantly, I've surrounded myself with outstanding litigators, outstanding lawyers, who will guide our younger assistants and help us all grow as an office.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
Yes, sir. Claudine, I think the first part of your question was, what experiences outside of the legal community do I have that suit me for this job? And clearly, that's my military experience. When I was 22 years old, right out of college, I joined the United States Navy. I went to officer candidate school. I became an ensign in the Navy. And my very first job was a division officer aboard a naval warship. And I was immediately placed in charge of over 70 sailors and Marines that were in my division. And as a 22-year-old young man who really had no life experiences outside of college and high school, that was baptism by fire. That was leadership training at its best, and that is what has definitely suited me going forward in my career as both a man, a father, a husband, and a litigator. The fact of the matter is that I've tried numerous cases, Claudine, over the course of my legal career that have also served me for this job in a legal community. I've tried civil cases, criminal cases, both plaintiffs and defense on the civil side, both prosecutors and defense on the criminal side. And unlike Mr. Flaherty, I've personally tried homicide cases. I tried 5 homicide cases in 1 year in the DA's office, which was unheard of at the time. So my experience, both inside and outside the legal community suits me best for this job by far.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha.
Claudine.
It's the Shanti.
Oh, it's
the
Shanti?
It's okay.
Shanti. The first part of the question is, without sounding egotistical, I'm a competitor. I am a person who has succeeded, whether it was sports, whether it was school, whether it was the DA's office. None of my experiences involved politics. When I got into the DA's office, I spent 20 years working my way up in the DA's office. So I applied, and I applied the fact that my father was an immigrant and believed in the American system of equal justice. And that was what I believe in, and I still believe in. But the second thing you mentioned is trial experience. And I think that's very important, because Mr. Flaherty, he's just mentioning to you cases that he consulted with somebody on. He's never tried anything. The bottom line is, he's playing at this. I've tried at least 35 cases. Homicides, arson. I've never lost a homicide or arson case. I've won probably over 80. I won more than I lost since I've been a defense attorney. But how can you sit there and make decisions for the whole DA's office about cases if you don't never did it? And that's the problem. And that's why the question is a good one.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha. Mr. Flaherty, you personal attack. You have 30 seconds to respond.
Mr. Satcha knows that I worked on the trial of Jonathan Parker, which was the first death penalty case. Tried it with Joe Maruzek. He knows that I worked on the trial against cop James Kopp, who killed Dr. Bernard Slepy. And he knows that I worked on the case of Robert Smith, the second death penalty case that Frank Clark instituted. He knows that I tray cases, but he also knows that I was in administration when Frank Clark appointed me chief of the city court back in December of 1999. He knows I have the most experience up here, and I'm best suited for the job.
Thank you. I don't think that was a personal attack.
Well, he said I know that I know that. Can I respond?
In the spirit of fairness, we'll give you 30 seconds.
Thank you, Al.
30 seconds.
You can count 15 of them?
Yeah, you can. Totally untrue. The fact that he carried somebody's books and pushed the cart doesn't make him the trial lawyer.
That's what I was going to say. So take the 30 back.
Okay. That's an absolute falsehood. You didn't try those cases. All you did was be consulted on them. I was consulted on thousands of cases, but I don't claim that I tried them.
Okay, gentlemen, we do have to move on. Next questioner is Eva Doyle, who will ask the first question. Okay, time out. Yes, sir.
Mr. Vodders, do you want my response to Shantae's question?
Thank you for keeping us straight. Yes, sir. We welcome your answer to the question.
Thank you very much.
My omission.
No.
My bad.
I'm
go
just
ahead, sir.
Just teasing. Well, first of all, with respect to the experience outside the office, Shantae, where I grew up, I'm a City of Buffalo kid. Grew up in North Buffalo in a mixed neighborhood. I had lots of friends of all races, colors, creeds. You know, we played street football and street hockey together, so I'm a regular guy. Secondly, I agree wholeheartedly with the comments about the military experience. You know, when you join the armed forces of the United States of America, the greatest team in the history of the world, you get to work alongside the best that this country has to offer. Kids from all over the country, all walks of life, all backgrounds, and I know personally that everyone's blood bleeds red. So in the military, there's none of this, you know, color, race, creed, nonsense whatsoever. You're all part of a brotherhood and sisterhood. So I believe that qualifies me from a personal standpoint. From a professional standpoint, as I mentioned earlier, I have led offices multiple times. I have prosecuted and handled more than 100 cases personally both at the trial, appellate, and administrative level. So I believe I have the requisite professional experience to lead this office as well. Thank you, Shante.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor.
And under time.
And thanks for that correction. Next question from Eva Doyle. She is directing this question directly at Mr. Flaherty, and then we will, again, take it in order for everyone else to answer. So, Ms. Doyle.
Thank you. Mr. Flaherty, the case of India Cummings has received a great deal of attention, especially in the African-American community. There have been protests and demonstrations. Has your office, and to the challengers also, will your office investigate the case? If you have begun an investigation, what is the status of the case now?
Let me just intervene on this. Ms. Doyle, could you first explain the India Cummings case? What that is about?
India Cummings was incarcerated at the holding center and received a number of injuries while there, and then later taken to the hospital where she later died. And there have been a lot of questions as to what actually happened in her case. And the community has been asking for some clarification of that.
Okay, now that everybody understands what the issue is, could you please just repeat the question again?
Well, I heard the question, Mr. Waters.
Okay, but I want to make sure for everyone's benefit what we're talking about. So please, if you could repeat
yes.
the question.
Yes. The case of India Cummings has received a great deal of attention, especially in the African-American community. There have been a number of protests and demonstrations. Has your office, and also to the challengers, will your office investigate the case? If you have begun an investigation, Mr. Flaherty, what is the status of the case now?
The answer is yes. We have an investigation into that case, and we have an investigation into another death at the holding center. But I can't talk about any of the particulars at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Flynn.
And yes, Ms. Doyle. When I become DA, I will definitely look into this matter, and any evidence brought before me, I will look at very carefully.
Thank you. Mr. Satcha.
Yes, Ms. Doyle, and I have done investigations at the holding center. I probably am the only person, I don't want to get anybody mad at me, but I'm probably the only person up here who has done investigations of police officers, who's indicted police officers. Not that I'm proud of gunning for police officers, but I guess I'm just pointing out that I did the hard jobs, the jobs that other people didn't want to do. And I have done investigations at the holding center. I am very familiar with them. And the holding center is a problem. And it's a problem that should have been addressed a long time ago. And too many people are there, and too many people get hurt there. And that's as much as I can say.
Thank you. Mr. Traynor.
Sir. Thank you, Eva. I was going to say, the first thing that I'd like to start my comments with is I think it's important to distinguish between an isolated case and any kind of a broad paintbrush condemnation of our law enforcement personnel. I think law enforcement personnel have an incredibly difficult job. They are individuals similar to military individuals who put their lives on the line each and every day for us. And I think that we cannot lose sight of that fact. And so, first and foremost, I'd like to say that I am solidly behind the law enforcement community. However, that said, if there is evidence of criminal behavior, regardless who perpetrates that, because no one is above the law, I most certainly would look into it and have looked into it in my military career, and I would take appropriate action. As for the particulars of this case, however, because it is pending, it would be improper for me to comment in any specific detail. I hope you can understand that, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Our next question.
Al, it was kind of an attack on me, so let me clarify something here. As As town attorney in Tonawanda, I am responsible for the investigation and ultimately all conduct of all personnel who work for the town, including town police officers, which I've been a part in. And as a military attorney, I've worked for the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, who handles all personnel matters, and in that capacity as well, like Mr. Sasha, I have been involved in numerous investigations regarding military police personnel.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. We're being flexible tonight, but I don't recall a personal attack.
No,
in this
I'm personal,
case.
But
okay.
Semi-attack.
Okay. Our next.
If I attack you, you'll know you're.
Our next question from Claudine Ewing from WGRZ TV. The first question goes to Mr. Flynn.
Mr. Flynn, things have gotten better. However, there are many police officers and detectives who have complained over the years that the district attorney's office only wants slam dunk cases. Is that culture going to change?
Absolutely, Claudine, and I dispute the premise that it's gotten better. I think that there has been over the years, and again, Michael can distance himself all he wants from the previous DA. He's tried to do that numerous times here tonight, but he's flip-flopped on that, obviously, by pointing out that he was first assistant and second in command and in charge numerous times. So you can't have it both ways, Michael. You can't be first assistant, second in command, and then I'm my own boss. It doesn't work that way. The fact of the matter is that numerous police officers over the course of my campaigning in the past 9 months have expressed a concern to me that the DA's office continues to cherry-pick cases and has cherry-picked cases for the past 8 years. The fact of the matter is that the Molly's Pub case that just recently was resolved was prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office because the DA's office wouldn't do it. We had a situation where the Rodriguez case, a cold case Lackawanna homicide case, was prosecuted by the Attorney General's office because, again, the DA's office wouldn't do it. And we had the Attorney General have to come in and handle a local homicide case. Those are the facts, Claudine. Those are the facts, ladies and gentlemen, who are out in the audience right here. We can't dispute those facts, and under my administration, that will change on day one.
Mr. Sato.
Claudine, that's an excellent question, and that is what I was trying to talk about before. Here's something. There's a handout. I can give it to anybody here who needs one. This is a list of the solved homicide cases since the start of the year. And don't let Mr. Flaherty try to pass it off as not his problem. It is his problem. Instead of having his assistants walking around throwing candy to people at parades, they should be up off their keisters working on these homicide cases, which are important to everybody else. And that's what it is to be a public servant. Not some politician that just tells everybody, blow smoke. The homicides are not being solved. And there's a reason for that, Claudine. And the reason is the same reason. And when Mr. Flaherty says people laugh when he says he's an aggressive prosecutor. Because nobody would know, because he never was involved in prosecuting cases. He was a backroom guy. And you know what? When he had to be driven around the county to be introduced to police agencies because they didn't know who he was. How can you be in the DA's office 20 years and people don't know who you are? That's a sign of politics. And that's the problem. You have to be a working prosecutor in order to do this job. And it's not being done in the right sort of way, because if the homicide, we have a public safety issue if the homicides are not being solved. People should be up in arms. He should be up in arms since he's a Buffalo citizen. And these are all Buffalo homicides. So I don't understand how this, and I looked, and the homicide solved rate.
Thank you.
is the lowest in Buffalo that it is in any city in New York.
Thank you, Mr. Sasha. Mr. Flaherty, under the amended moderator rules, you can use your 30 additional seconds and go to 30 when you answer your question, or you can take your 30 right now.
I'll wait.
Okay. Mr. Traynor.
Thank you, Claudine, for the question. This actually is spot on with what I've experienced. I have faced the dilemma many times in my military career about shaky cases, you know, oh, it's too hard to prosecute, whatever. I have never shied away from either personally prosecuting or instructing my subordinate attorneys to prosecute a tough case when it's the right thing to do. And sometimes defense counsel will say, well, unless you give us a really advantageous pretrial agreement, we're going to litigate this and you're going to lose. And I always told my attorneys, this is an opportunity for you to become a great litigator. Long before there was ever a national outcry against domestic violence, spouse abuse, etc., back in the late 80s and early 90s, I was a young firebrand JAG, and I went after these cases that no one had ever heard of before. You know, senior commanders were saying, well, we can't take this kind of a case. Luckily, I was persuasive and my boss let me do it. So, no, I have personal experience with this. I have never, and I will never, shy away from prosecuting cases that need to be prosecuted, regardless of the outcome. Because here's a newsflash. The pursuit of justice is what the district attorney is charged with, not the pursuit of victory. We want to win, of course. We're competitors, and we believe that we will win in a just case. But win or lose, first and foremost, we must pursue justice. And sometimes that means you're going to lose a case when it's the right case to prosecute, even if the evidence may not be there.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Mr. Flaherty, we have reset the time clock to 2:30. You have 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
It is our responsibility as prosecutors to seek the just prosecution of the guilty and the exoneration of the innocent, and we do just that. We have received convictions in 30 homicide cases this year. The issues with the Buffalo Police Department and their solvability are dire, and they are very real, but they are separate and apart from the cases that we prosecute and the results that we received. We've opened hundreds of more files at this point this year than we did at this point last year. I was not the boss last year. I was not the boss the year before that. I'm the boss now. I have a different attitude, although always within mind that we are looking for the just prosecution of the guilty and the exoneration of the innocent. My colleague is absolutely correct. It's not about wins and losses. It's about doing the right thing. And I have demonstrated over these past 8 months that's exactly what I stand for, and that's exactly what I do, and it's exactly what I demand of my assistants. And we are seeing the results of our hard work with real results, and I stand by that. Thank you, Mr. Waters.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Our next question from panelist Shanti Perkins, and the first question goes to Mr. Sacha.
Okay, Mr. Sacha. Many people in the African-American community feel very strongly that the John Walker case needs to be reopened. Mr. Walker is currently off of lifetime parole. However, he maintains his innocence and would like to be completely exonerated. As district attorney, would you be willing to reopen his case?
Shante, I would be willing to talk about any case and the facts of that case when presented to me as district attorney. But I don't know anything about the case. I am not familiar with the case. So it would be the political thing to say, oh, yes, I will do it. But without knowing about the case itself, and this is the thing that I have an issue with, and I had an issue with Mr. Sedita, was every case is different, and every case should be decided based upon the facts and the law with the idea of equal justice. No one's above the law, and nobody's below the law. Unfortunately, the way that it's become is there's no confidence in the fact that the DA's office will look at cases in an honest and equitable way. All I can do today is to promise to anyone, Mr. Walker's family, that I would look at the case, and if I felt that there was something wrong, I would certainly act on it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Satya. Mr. Trainer. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Shante. I was going to say the best way to answer this in a short sense is to say I agree with virtually all of the comments that Mr. Satya made, but I would also add to that the fact that I have somewhat of a personal experience. I don't know the details of this particular case that you mentioned, but there was one event, again, when I was a young prosecutor. I was convinced, and everyone was convinced, of the guilt of the accused. It was a solid, solid case. And on the morning of trial, the defense counsel came up to me. I thought he was sandbagging me, but he wasn't. And he was able to produce proof that his client was, in fact, innocent. This is as we're getting ready to prosecute the case. My action was to call the convening authority, explain it, and recommend that we need to withdraw the charges. Convening authority trusted me, gave me the green light. I walked into the courtroom before the judge, and I said, Your Honor, the United States wishes to withdraw charges against, fill in the blank, the name of the accused, because we have just received evidence that exonerates him. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. We don't prosecute people who are innocent. That's unfathomable to me. And so, again, without knowing the details of this case, I wouldn't want to give a blanket answer, but I hope what I've just told you provides a good insight, a good window into who I am as a person. I'm open-minded, and above all, I'd like to think that I'm a fair individual. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trainer. Mr. Flaherty.
As I already said, our dual purpose is the just prosecution of the guilty and the exoneration of the innocent, and any innocent man who is convicted is a travesty of justice. And whatever we can do to undo a remedy that we will do, I have been asked to look at pending indictments and made the decision to withdraw charges, as Mr. Trainer just described, because we found that the evidence was insufficient to support them. So that's a decision that we make on a regular basis in our office. And we are called upon to look at cases where somebody had been convicted and there's a claim of innocence, and we look at all of them, and we will continue to look at all of them and make our decisions based upon the law and the evidence and what is fair.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
Ashante, I am well familiar with the Walker case, as Mr. Flaherty should be as well, since it was his office over the course of the past 8 years that has seen that case come before it in numerous procedural stages over the course of the past 8 years. And logistically, I think that a lot of the appellate processes have already taken place. So from a logistical point of view, from the appellate level, I'm not sure what stage it's at, but I can assure you and promise you that I will definitely look at that matter if brought before me. You have my word on that. And again, anyone who knows me, who's served with me, especially in my days as a judge, know that I am fair. Every attorney in town knew in my 4 years as a Tonawanda judge and as an acting Buffalo City Court judge, where I served, I had the unique capacity to serve both the residents of the city of Buffalo and the residents of the suburbs in Tonawanda. That unique perspective as a judge has given me the credentials and the temperament to do this job. I ran as a judge on the platform of fair but firm. My opponent in my judicial race ran the platform of firm but fair. I believe that fair is more important than firm. I run as your DA candidate on that same platform, fair but firm. And everything I do in that office, every case I look at, every witness I talk to, every lawyer I talk to, every police officer I talk to, every member of the community, Shanti, that I talk to, members of the clergy, whoever they are, who come before me and say, Mr. Flynn, we need you to look at this again. We need your input on that. I assure you, I will not only look at it carefully and closely, but fairly.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Before we ask our next question, our BABJ President Rod Watson has the index cards here over on the side. If you have a question that you would like for us to ask Rod, and he'll give you a card to fill out. We can't promise every question will be answered, but we'll try to get to as many as we can. Our next question now from Eva Doyle of the Buffalo Criterion for Mr. Traynor.
Yes, Mr. Traynor. With the recent police shootings of black men around the country, many in this community question whether, if something like this happens here, will we get a fair prosecution of the police if it is warranted? What is your position on this issue? And given the close working relationship between the district attorney's office and the police, would you bring in a special prosecutor to handle such a case?
Thank you, Eva. I believe that I've had a similar question earlier, and again, let me reiterate that you're absolutely right. District attorneys work hand in glove with law enforcement officials. They have an incredibly tough job. They put their lives on the line for us, and that is worthy of a lot of credibility. Also, as I said earlier, you know, no one is above the law. No one is below the law, as has been pointed out as well. And if the facts point towards criminal behavior, that will be pursued, dealt with appropriately. I don't think any individual would oppose that view. And on the flip side of the coin, I don't believe any individual, regardless of background, socioeconomic status, you know, race, color, religion, whatever, I can't believe anybody honestly, you know, holds with this recent widespread targeting of law enforcement officials. It's absolutely horrible. It's a travesty. That has to be condemned as well. It's nothing short of outright murder. And I do not stand with that. I stand opposed to it. I will prosecute to the fullest extent of the law anyone who tries to harm a law enforcement official or target them. But again, to answer your question, no one is above the law, and if the facts point towards criminal behavior by anyone, then they must answer for it. If there is, I believe the last part of the question dealt with a special prosecutor, I would not want to give a blanket statement that that would always happen, but I would certainly be open-minded to consider it in an appropriate situation. If the facts were such that warranted it, I would be open-minded to that. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Mr. Flaherty.
Well, last July, Governor Cuomo signed Executive Order Number 147, which removed the prosecutorial authority of police-involved deaths of civilians from the local district attorney to the attorney general. So jurisdiction automatically rests with Mr. Schneiderman's office up until his office decides to return it to the local prosecutor. We've had one police-involved fatality this year in Cheektowaga. The attorney general reviewed it, determined that it was not a case that it wanted, and so we took it. And we gathered the evidence, we investigated it, we presented that matter to a grand jury, and the grand jury decided that there were no charges to be filed. Had Executive Order 147 not been filed and the law was the same as it had been forever, I would absolutely promise the citizens that we would treat every police shooting or police death of a civilian from a police officer seriously, and would not give, would not sweep it under the rug. And if the charges were there, we would seek indictments against the culpable officers. If the governor rescinds this order, that's exactly my position.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
Yes, my overall mantra as far as my legal philosophy is follow the evidence wherever it leads. And that is what I'll do as your next district attorney. I will follow the evidence wherever it leads. If the evidence leads to an honor student here at Ball State committing a crime, that individual will be prosecuted. If the evidence leads to a public official committing a crime, that individual will be prosecuted. I will, like I said, follow the evidence wherever it leads. I will prosecute any public official, public servant, any member of this community who commits a crime. And, you know, the whole point of the recent shootings and violence that has gone on in other cities, which hasn't, thank God, come to Buffalo yet, you know, stirs a lot of emotions. And those emotions have to be resolved not by finger-pointing and blaming anyone. They have to be solved by talking, by communicating. My law partner right now, one of the most prominent African-American attorneys in this town, John Elmore, is at a forum up in Niagara Falls talking with the police commissioner up there and the mayor regarding these issues involving the entire country. And I stand firm in my belief that communication is the key, that we need to resolve these issues by open dialogue and talking to one another and not by finger-pointing.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha.
Well, Your Honor, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
I
have to
promotion.
Turn that down, though.
I'll have you substitute for Savita. Mr. Flaherty's right. It's not his decision right now, but I believe that the question that Eva asked is so crucial to our criminal justice system, and that is the distrust in some communities of the system, of the police, and it's not just the police, it's the DA's office too. And people don't believe that they're going to get treated straight. And they don't think the system it works right. And I think it's a feeling that is justified by years of political actions by prosecutors and by police agencies. And I'm not, some of the best people I've met are police officers, but I've also met some bad ones. And some of the best people I've met are prosecutors, but I've also met some bad ones. And I have to say that although this is a very situation which is bringing out a lot of emotions, I'm hoping that people will think a little more deeply about how they select their DAs. Don't select the DA because they're the party person. Or don't select a DA because select a DA based on merit and based on independence and based on whether you believe they've proven that they will do justice in every case.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha. Our next question from Claudine Ewing of WGRZ-TV. A question goes to Mr. Flaherty.
Mr. Flaherty, if you can talk about the demographic breakdown of assistant DAs in your office and investigators as in terms of how many African Americans that you have. But also, coupled with that question has to do with the fact that you get to hire. Civil service not required here, but how do we know that this will not be an office that's packed with friends and family party?
Of the party? Well, I'm independent. I have no party. I am a party of one, and I'm proud of that. I can tell you that when I took office, diversity and having the office reflect the diversity of the community was important to me, and I demonstrated that in the appointment of Donna Milling as my first assistant. I am the only county official who has a person of color as part of his cabinet, and she is the second in command of my office, and she got that position because she deserved it. She earned it, and she is more than qualified. Since I took office, we have made a concerted effort at minority outreach, and we have hired at least 4 members of the minority community to serve as assistant district attorneys. And we have work to do. We will continue to do that work. I've met with members of the Minority Bar Association, in an effort to reach its membership. I've met with members of the Student Minority Bar Associations at UB in an effort to reach their membership, because minority law students are not usually taught or promoted towards the position of prosecution. And we are trying to work with them to increase their interest in the office so that it's something that they would consider applying to. I am proud of the success we've had thus far. I know we have ways to go, and we will continue to work in a positive direction because I truly believe that the office should reflect the diversity of the community, the entire community, just like, you know, my daughter's school have a diverse population. I want my office to have a diverse population because it makes it so much easier when the assistant district attorney and the witness have come from a similar background. I'm working on that. I've demonstrated that, and you have my word that I will continue to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
Claudine, I work in a small law firm. We have only 6 employees. One of our law partners is, like I said, the most prominent African-American attorney in Buffalo, John Elmore. We have 3 paralegals. One is Hispanic, and 2 are African-American. So over 50% of my law firm are from the minority community. My clients, I probably have right now, which is lower. The campaign's killing me, my prior practice here. I've got about 50 clients, and I would say over 50% of them are African-American as well. So I work in the African-American community, both at work and my clients. And the fact of the matter, Claudine, is that the district attorney's record of minority hiring is abysmal. What Mr. Flaherty forgot to tell you was that there are about 90 attorneys in that office, approximately. And over the course of the past 8 years, there's been, on average, 2 or 3 African-Americans in that office. And again, Mr. Flaherty was second in command. He ran the office on a day-to-day basis, interviewed people, had a major input in who got hired in that office. And as I said before, out of a total of almost 15, 16 investigators, one investigator has been eliminated because I had to hire a public spokesman. I call her a campaign spokesman, quite frankly, but not one investigator is African-American. This is an abysmal record, a record that has to be changed and will be changed when I become district attorney.
Well, now that I am
Mr. Flaherty, would you like to respond?
Yeah, he's better than that. He has seen my hiring practices since I am now the district attorney. He knows the values, as I've already demonstrated. He knows where I live, where my kids go to school, what I believe in. And, John, you're better than that. I'm proud of the hiring of diverse and in increasing the diversity in the office. I will continue to strive to make it right.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Satcha.
Is I'm better than that? Attack on me or not?
No.
Okay.
That's a ruling from the from the moderator.
You're the judge. You calm down. You're the judge.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha.
Thank you, Judge Waters. Claudine.
And you can address the audience because they are the ones who really need to hear this.
Let me start by saying that I have to agree that the DA's office has done an abysmal job of hiring black, and not just black, but minority lawyers. And the reasons for that are varied and many. But this hiring spree that Mr. Flaherty's talking about has been over the last 6 months. And Mr. Flaherty, I believe, if he's honest about it, was the hiring chief. When they sent out notices to schools, guess in the last 8 years, guess whose name was on it? It was Mike Flaherty as the first assistant. So somehow he was in charge of hiring, but he never was able to do it. Now, all of a sudden, he's running up for an election. See, these are the kind of things that upset me about addressing these questions, is the sincerity. And it bugs me whenever I see, quite frankly, people treating people of color and pandering in the ways that that it shouldn't be anything like this. It should be everybody should be treated the same, and I am disgusted whenever I see that it's not done that way. I'm the person who stands up and has stood up in circumstances like that. And I can assure you, if I was elected DA, I would be hiring everybody that was qualified, and race played would play no part.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha. Mr. Flaherty, 30 seconds to respond.
Well, again, I've been district attorney since January, and it's my record that I stand on, not my predecessor's record. And frankly, I do intend to hire qualified candidates. The difference is I will aggressively seek those to make the office more diverse. I have, and I will continue to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Traynor.
Yes, sir. Claudine, this is a great question. Thank you so much. The first part of the question I'll try to answer quickly because up until this past October, I was a blank my entire life. I signed with the Conservative Party back in October. So you don't have to worry about friends and family or what have you. I will run an office of professionals who are outstanding at their job. If they happen to belong to a particular party, I don't care what party they belong to. What I care about is that they're outstanding prosecutors. So we can put that one to rest real quickly. The second component is the question about minority hiring. It's hard to answer in a way because, you know, in many respects, that isn't how I'm wired. I don't see white, black, brown, you know, purple, polka dot, whatever. I just see good people. Good people who are, you know, friendly and do a great job. That said, if we have to drill down and ask about, you know, minority hirings and so on and so forth, that's one of the things I loved about being in the military and why I stayed, quite frankly. I was only going to do 4 years because I had lots of student loans to repay and I needed to make some real money on the outside. But I loved the military so much, active duty, that I stayed 24/7 every day for 28 plus years because it's, as I said, the greatest team in the world. And there have been many people of color who have worked with me and for me when I've been in the position as the head attorney for the office and for the command. I have promoted them. I have gotten them awards. And one in particular I was blessed to work with in three different assignments. When I first met her, she was a master sergeant. By the time our time together ended, she had ascended all the way to chief master sergeant of the in the United States Air Force, which is the highest enlisted rank. Her daughter and son refer to me as Uncle Joe. That's how close we are. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Our next question from Shantae Perkins for Mr. Flynn.
Okay, this question is for Mr. Flynn. I know that some candidates have campaigned a great deal in the African-American community, and we've seen candidates visit black churches, shake hands, and leave. But have you spent time speaking to the people about your campaign in meaningful dialogue, about your stand on the issues facing this community?
Yes, ma'am. As you correctly pointed out, I am probably the candidate you're talking about. I have proudly, since January, spent every Sunday at a different African-American church in the city of Buffalo. I have visited over 20 churches, and not only have I visited, but I have attended the entire service. And I have been given the opportunity to speak at these services, and afterward, I have stayed around and personally not only shook the hand of every person in the congregation, but talked to them and answered any questions that they had about me or my candidacy. I have actively campaigned in our community for the past 9 months, and I am proud of that. I am proud of meeting new people and getting out in the community. I have been blessed with the endorsement of the Western New York Concerned Clergy Coalition, which is a group, some of you may know, of a number of African-American pastors who are concerned about this community, who are concerned about the welfare of our residents, especially in the city of Buffalo. And these leaders in the clergy have endorsed me. I have also been endorsed by the Challenger, which is one of the finest local papers in the country. In the African-American community, they have endorsed me as well. So I think it's clear from the endorsement of newspapers like this and organizations like this that the African-American community has said loud and clear that John Flynn is clearly the best candidate for Erie County District Attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha.
Well, John, I don't think that. I got to be honest with you. That's a pretty presumptuous comment. That really is
true.
Presumptuous.
It's true,
because
though.
Because what you're doing is the same thing that other people do to minority communities, which is make presumptive conclusions based on very little evidence. And all I would say is, I'm not an elitist. I went to public school, okay? Went to Cheektowaga Central. My father was an immigrant. Many of my friends are black. But I don't sit up here telling about all my friends, all my black friends, people that call me uncle, stuff like that. You know? But it's true. It's true. The bottom line is, okay, I played basketball in college. I was a minority. I played at Howard. Okay, I played at Howard. There were probably three other people who looked like me at the university when I was there playing in the gym. Okay, but the real important thing, I believe, is do you look people in the eye? Do you socialize with people of color? Most of the DAs came from the same high school. We don't, not only do we not hire minorities, we don't even hire public school people. I used to laugh to say we hired one person from Cheektowaga Central every 10 years. It is wrong. I think if I'm elected, I would probably be the first DA from public school to be elected. Does everybody have to be from Canisius? It's a good high school, Joe. But it doesn't mean that everybody has to come from the same high schools. And that leads to a lot of the elitist attitudes that you see, and I resent it myself.
Mr. Flynn, yes,
well,
sir.
Good. I'm glad, Judge, you knew that was an attack.
30 seconds.
I am not being presumptuous at all. I am not pulling any kind of data and making a conclusion that is out of bounds here. The facts are the facts, and the conclusion is that the Western New York Concerned Clergy Coalition endorsed me. That's a fact, not a conclusion. The fact of the matter is that the Challenger endorsed me. That's a fact. That's not presumptuous.
So that's all the black people?
No, I never said it was all the black people. I just said it was two entities that endorsed me and didn't endorse you or anyone on the stage.
By the way,
I went to East Aurora High School.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn.
I give you credit.
Now, Mr. Trainer, the sarcastic comment about Uncle Joe, personal attack, you can use the additional 30 seconds. We'll give you 2:30.
I have a present for everyone. I don't need 30 extra seconds.
You don't need 30. Okay. We'll give you two.
Okay. Ready to go?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, It isn't an issue of uncle or elitism or whatever. Folks call me Uncle Joe because I have a personal rapport with individuals. And I'm proud of those relationships. I like people. I like to have close working relationships with them. In terms of elitist, I'm blessed over the fact that both of my parents scrimped and saved and worked hard and didn't take vacations, etc., so that they were able to give me a quality education. In terms of my undergraduate and law school, I funded that with scholarships, jobs, and student loans. So trust me, a silver spoon was never born in my mouth. In terms of the question about going to churches, truthfully, I can answer that shortly and say I have not been to other churches. I am a practicing serious Catholic Christian. I go to church every Sunday and holy days, and I respect faith too much to try to go to someone else's church to try to score points or what have you. So the short answer is no, I have not done that. That said, I am more than happy anytime, anywhere, to meet with anyone who extends me an invitation and wants to meet with me. And hopefully that answers the question in under 2 minutes.
Thank
and
you.
No,
you
and
did.
No rebuttal.
Don't hear the bell. Mr. Flaherty.
It was important to me when I first took office that I personally and my assistants entered into the community to get introduce ourselves and what we do, but more importantly, learn from the community what we can do better. And so we have done just that. Either I go myself or others go for me to block clubs, community forums, events, just so that we can see and meet people from all communities in an environment which is not related to court. We're not here to talk about a crime. We're here just to introduce ourselves as fellow citizens of Erie County. I'm pleased with the way that is progressing, that the way my assistants have embraced that opportunity and will continue to embrace that opportunity. I also recognize that there is some, distrust in the community for law enforcement in general. It's why I'm going to offer asset forfeiture funds to police agencies in Erie County for law enforcement training on diversity and working relations between the majority population and the minority population. And I'm also going to ask the state to fully fund body cameras for Buffalo police officers. It's a very expensive proposition, but I think that body cameras will go a long way to improving trust in the community, because then we'll know what happened.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Our next question from Ms. Eva Doyle of the Buffalo Criterion. And her first question goes to Mr. Satcha.
This is a question from the audience. When the opioid heroin problem was mainly in the city, it was our problem. Now it's in the suburbs. It's an epidemic. How do you plan to fix this problem?
Well, certainly by not eliminating the narcotic squad, that would be the worst thing to do. And that's what Mr. Flaherty did. And don't let him tell you any different. He was the guy, along with Frank Sedita, he was first assistant, and they eliminated the Narcotics Bureau. And I'm not, I am all in favor, even though I was Narcotics Bureau chief back in the 90s, I'm all in favor of alternatives to incarceration. I'm all in favor of treatment for addicts. But you can't not prosecute sellers, okay, in my opinion. But Eva, you've hit on something that I find is an irony, is that, quite frankly, the heroin issue is largely a suburban issue, in my experience, because I'm a criminal defense lawyer. And I'm the only one up here who really has had a career for one reason or another, as a criminal defense lawyer. And the reality is that was, went back in the 90s, because crack cocaine went through minority communities, it was all about the crack cocaine and how horrible everybody was. Now all of a sudden it's all treatment. And I think the questioner has pointed out that there is an inequity there, which should be recognized. But I guess the important thing that I would do is I would become involved in both the prosecution and diversion of appropriate people who had drug problems, depending upon their circumstances, and do anything I could to help the situation for everyone, no matter what community. So, but I recognize the inequity.
Thank you, Mr. Satya. Mr. Trainer.
Yes, sir. Frankly, the urban versus suburban dichotomy, that predates my return to Western New York from active duty military service. But what I can say is, number one, unfortunately, it's not the district attorney and or his or her office who has the responsibility solely to, quote, solve the problem. We would be partners among multidisciplines, you know, to address this. That said, throughout all my years in the military, because, yes, there are drug offenses in the military as well, I have been hit, if you will, by an extreme distinction between people who are dependent upon illicit drugs and those who push, those who distribute, those who sell, and prey upon addicts. So from a prosecutorial standpoint, I would certainly draw a bright line distinction between people who are addicts and need to break the cycle. You know, we would work with the partner agencies that would get them treatment, offer them treatment. It's obviously up to them to accept it so they can get clean. As for those who prey upon the misery of others, those are the individuals who I would pursue zealously. I hope that that helps.
Thank you, Mr. Trainer. Mr. Flaherty.
What has caught everyone's attention is the increase in deaths due to opioid overdoses, and many of them in Erie County are caused not so much by heroin but by fentanyl. Even though the heroin today is far more powerful and pure than it was just 10 years ago, fentanyl is 50 times more powerful than heroin. And it's the mixture of heroin and fentanyl which has led to so many of these deaths. As you all know, last year, 2015, we had 256 deaths by opioid overdose in Erie County, in about breakdown of about 55% suburban to 45% Buffalo. So this issue doesn't know any geographical socioeconomic borders. And in fact, most people in this room can know somebody whose lives have been affected by this disease. It's an insidious disease that affects those who are suffering from this addiction and other addictions that are out there. And we fully recognize in law enforcement that we are not going to arrest our way out of it. As Mr. Trainer said, there has to be a multi-pronged approach starting with prevention and treatment. And we know more today than we knew before. We now recognize addiction more as a disease than ever before, and shame on us for 20 years ago not treating addiction with the compassion that we do today. But we also have to take a hard stance on those dealers who are peddling this poison. Every packet of heroin, every packet of fentanyl is a potential death sentence to somebody. So we are I am part of the Erie County Opioid Task Force. I often speak at events with Gail Burstein, the Commissioner of Health, on our attempt to educate the public on what we can do as individuals to help our children stop from becoming addicted to opioids, and I'll continue to do that. It is a multi-pronged problem. There is no quick, short-term solution, but we are committed. We are collaborating with all of our partners, and we will beat this scourge.
Wow. Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
Ladies and gentlemen, we had a serious problem with heroin and opioids when it occurred in the city, and we have a serious problem now that it has come to the suburbs. And this is a serious issue that needs serious answers to. As Mark alluded to, the Narcotics Bureau in the DA's office used to be a standalone bureau. It was under the umbrella of the SIP unit, which was the Special Investigation Prosecution Unit, but it was still considered a standalone bureau. Under the administration where Mr. Flaherty was second in command, it was merged into the Felony Trial Bureau and was no longer a standalone bureau. It was then merged into the Tactical Prosecution Bureau that handled other matters besides narcotics. This occurred during the past 4 years when the problem that we are having has now come to fruition. We need an aggressive narcotics bureau in the DA's office. that only does narcotics. We used to have aggressive task force with the state police where wiretaps were used, and there was an aggressive operation to get to the heart of the people who were peddling this poison. That was dismantled under the Sedita-Flaherty administration. Dismantled. Those are facts. A former bureau chief at a narcotics bureau told me that Mr. Flaherty stated that we're not social workers, we're prosecutors. The drug court is a social court. We don't want to be beholden to confidential informants. It used to be a single buy by a confidential informant was good enough to get a prosecution. Now, under their administration, they want two buys within 6 months. We got to go back to what it was in the old way.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Flaherty, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm not a social worker. I'm a prosecutor, but I work with social workers who are social workers. And under my administration, we do have a narcotics bureau, and we are professionally prosecuting the dealers. But you're not going to arrest or prosecute your way out of this problem. You have to work collaboratively with other agencies, other providers, and other members of the coalition in order to, with a multi-pronged approach, and prevention, treatment, and prosecution are all working hand in hand, and we will beat this scourge working together.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Before we go on to the next question, just want to thank you as audience members for your attentiveness and these very relevant questions that our panelists have been asking. That's what journalism's all about. So our next question from Claudine Ewing of WGRZ-TV, and her question goes to Mr. Traynor.
This is another question from the audience. It says, in Buffalo, the disparity for African Americans arrested for marijuana possession versus whites is high enough to violate the Safe Streets Act. Prosecutors around the country, including in New York City, have addressed these disparities by declining to prosecute. What policies will your office adopt to address these disparities?
Thank you for the question, whoever raised it in the audience. I guess the easiest way to answer that question is, I prosecute when cases are appropriate. You know, other people speak of it in terms as, you know, you follow the evidence, you follow the facts. I don't care what the skin color of an accused happens to be. If they're white and they've committed a criminal offense, they're going to be prosecuted. If they're black, if they're brown, if they're striped, and they commit a criminal offense, they're going to be prosecuted. That's what no one is above the law means. I don't think I can state it any more simpler. I will play no favor either to help or to hurt disproportionately anybody. If you break the law, you're going to be held accountable.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Mr. Flaherty.
For all intents and purposes, marijuana has been decriminalized in New York, and most people who are charged with it do not end up with a criminal conviction. We do see cases where people are driving while smoking marijuana. It is a hallucinogen, and that leads to or can lead to collisions, which, you know, can prove deadly. So it's not unlike alcohol in that effect, although alcohol is probably more dangerous to one's health. Marijuana is not a top priority for prosecution. We may have to talk to the police about an enforcement, but selective prosecution or selective arrests have no part in our society, and I will not stand for that.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Flynn.
The underlining premise of the question, putting aside marijuana, has to do with racial disparities in our criminal justice system. And the numbers, quite frankly, speak for themselves. In November of 2014, there was a study by the Vero Institute of Justice where they issued a research paper called The Prosecutor's Guide for Advancing Racial Equity. And it talked about prosecution in the racial justice program, that talked about the disparities in our criminal justice system between African Americans and whites. And in November of 2013, there was a study done here in Erie County. The Open Buffalo Report was done at that time. And the numbers were staggering, quite frankly. They were data was used from 2007 to 2011 from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, and it showed that African Americans in the criminal justice system were at a 3-time greater proportion than their population, almost double for Hispanics. So we have to have research data analysis done in the DA's office. I am open to any entity who can come into the DA's office and work with me when I become DA to explore whether or not there is racial disparity within Erie County. I am open to that. I will explore that. And if it is true, I will change that.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha.
Based upon 30 years of doing criminal law, 22 years at the DA's office, 8 years of criminal defense attorney, marijuana is used as an excuse to go further in a search in order to find other things. That's the reality of those marijuana cases. And it's not every case. You have to look at every case separately based on the facts. But I don't think Mr. Fleury's being accurate when he says he doesn't prosecute marijuana cases. I'll bet that half of his gun cases, there is marijuana that was used as a reason for a car stop or some other reason in order to get the gun. And he prosecutes marijuana cases, I'm sure. He doesn't throw it out. But it raises the bigger question, and John is right. There is an inequity. It's an inequity that has to be addressed. It is something that cannot be ignored. And when I am DA, it'll be clear to everybody that I will make the hard decisions, that I am not afraid to make the police angry, that I've made them angry before, that I don't do things to please the political people. And apparently, even though Mike doesn't prosecute marijuana cases, he also doesn't prosecute Steve Pigeon for rigging elections. So, you know.
Please.
So, you know, that's not really a sign of anything important. The bottom line is, it is definitely wrong when some kid on the east side is getting prosecuted for some little marijuana case and some wealthy supporter of Mike and his godfather, Frank Sedita, is rigging elections and getting away with it.
Thank you, Mr. Satcha. Mr. Flaherty, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Mark, unlike most people in this room, I read your memo from December.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Because Frank said he didn't.
No, I did.
You should have told him.
We both know that you never called for the prosecution of Steve Pigeon.
That's not true.
You never did.
That is not true.
You're
a liar. You are a straight-up liar.
I've read that memo.
And if you want to make the memo public right now, go ahead and do it.
And under oath, when asked about it at your deposition, you acknowledge that.
No.
Page 108 and 109 of the testimony.
Let's tell the truth about Mike.
Nope. 30 seconds is up.
Nope.
Sorry, Mark. Our next question from Shante Perkins for Mr. Flaherty.
Okay, Mr. Flaherty. The worst kept secret in the district attorney's office is who influenced the grand jury to dismiss the first indictment against Ms. Ballow in the hit-and-run death of Mr. Moss. Were you the individual from the DA's office who went into the Moss grand jury and asked them to revoke their initial indictment?
Who's that question?
It's to Mr. Flaherty.
Mr. Flaherty.
Right. So everybody knows that for me to talk about what happened to the grand jury would be, you know, committing a crime. You can say not, but you seem to know Article 190. And that question was raised before Justice Burns, who issued his order and determined that everything that that our prosecutors did, both in the presentation 2 years ago and this past spring, was proper. And I look forward to the prosecution of Gabe Ballow.
Okay, Mr. Flynn.
Michael is wrong. What is improper is the discussion of any of the proceedings and comments and testimony and witness statements and evidence that was presented to the grand jury and in front of the grand jury. The question was not what was said in the grand jury. The question was not what evidence was presented in the grand jury. The question was not what was conducted in the grand jury. It was a simple question. Were you or were you not the individual who walked back into the grand jury after the grand jury had indicted the Ballot case and told them to unindict? I don't care what you said in there. I don't care what was done in there. All the question was, and the audience and all of Erie County wants to know, were you the one who walked back in the room, yes or no?
Before you answer, Mr. Flaherty, Mr. Satya, I think you're going to be asking the same question.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
I'll give you your 2 minutes.
Okay. First of all, Mr. Flaherty knows this isn't a viable. Mr. Flynn is absolutely right. Mr. Flaherty is hiding behind grand jury secrecy when he and Frank Sedita tampered with an indictment that had been voted. Now, let me read the law to you. Upon voting to indict a person, a grand jury must, through its foreman or acting foreman, file an indictment. But they didn't want it because they didn't want another Coruscanti case. Because all he is a politician, just like Frank Sedita. And so what they flipped out, he sent Mike back in the grand jury, and then Mike did something that you can't do. The grand jury, 800-year-old institution, the backbone of our criminal justice system. These are the people, the conscience of the community. And Mike, you went back in there and you convinced them to no-bill it for your selfish reasons. And that's the crux of why Mr. Flaherty cannot be the full-time DA. He can't be. Because he has no respect. He puts himself and his political interests above those of society and being a public servant. And I've proven every time I stand up. Why didn't you stand up, Mike, if you didn't agree with it? And the bottom line is, we can't have a grand jury if the DA's office, when they get a result that they don't want, can turn around and tell them, oh, well, you don't really mean that. You can't do that. You couldn't do it with a regular jury, and you're wrong. Judge Burns didn't say that you could do that. All he said is that the question is moot. He never said that you could do what you did. And quite frankly, Al, I think they've done this a number of times.
Thank you, Mr. Seth. Mr. Traynor, before Mr. Flaherty responds, are you going to comment basically on the same line of question?
Attorneys typically never say in 10 words what they can say in 100, but I'll yield the time.
Okay. I'll take your time.
I'll take your time. No.
I tried.
No. Okay.
No, but
Joe,
would you give me your time?
Sure.
And I'll take a minute, and John, you can take a minute.
Sure.
It's an important issue.
It's a huge issue.
It's a huge issue.
Okay, before you do that, Mr. Flaherty's already, he's got a minute now to respond to these two attacks. You want to add another one, then we'll add another 30 seconds. Mr. Flaherty, would you care to respond? And you have a minute.
Yeah, I promised Barry Moss's sister Maria that I would not use this political issue, and I'm not going to. The decisions made by my predecessor are his. The decisions made by me are mine. I'm not afraid of another Coruscanti, or I wouldn't have reopened the investigation, and I wouldn't have presented new evidence to the grand jury, and I wouldn't have sought an indictment. I stand by the actions that I took and distance myself from the actions my predecessor took.
Well, the actions...
I know this is a very hot topic, and people would like to hear more about this, but we really need to move on because there are other things folks would like to hear about.
But so, Al, he's leaving them with the idea.
Mark, it's one of many very important topics, Mr. Flaherty has answered it, and he's answered it a couple of times.
But he used the family. He used the family.
Okay, sure. That, you know what, sure. Mark, Mr. Flynn, that's for the voters sure. to rule on, okay? So we will move on to the next question. Shante Perkins asking the question. I'm sorry, is it Eva?
Yes,
and
yes.
This will be the last question from our panelists.
And so, to all of the candidates.
I think the question goes to Mr. Flynn, doesn't it?
Oh, to Mr. Flynn.
Yes.
There are so many issues that we face in our community. Do you plan to hold any town hall meetings in the African-American community before the election?
Before the election?
Yes.
I will be. I will if someone asks me to. I have no problem with doing that at all. I have been, like I said before, I have been in the African-American community for the past 9 months now. I have been at numerous churches, block clubs, community groups, picnics, all types of different organizations and community events that have taken place in our community. I have been there. I have addressed the entire community. I have addressed all types of questions and issues. The opportunity to have, I believe that Yes Buffalo is having a community event on September 8th that will address some of the same issues that we're addressing tonight. That will be a community event that I'll be at. And so I think that my entire campaign has been very receptive to the African-American community, to the needs of the community, and to reaching out and establishing relationship going forward. Because, again, as Mark stated here tonight, it's not what you do during an election. It's not what you do during a campaign. It's what you do when people aren't looking. It's what you do day in and day out over the course of your 4 years as district attorney. And I want to be judged, Ms. Doyle, on my performance as DA for the next 4 years. What I do during the campaign or during the election will spill over into my administration. And that is a promise that I make to the people of this county. That is a pledge I make to every voter out there who I know is going to vote for me.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Satcha.
Well, I'd love to have a meeting every day. Somebody invite me, I'll come. And if not, I'll arrange it. I'd love to do that. And John just said something that was maybe, and I got to give you credit, was maybe the best thing that I've heard here tonight, which is, it's not what you do when people are watching. It's what you do every day. And all I can tell you is I'm 100% sincere. I say what I think, obviously. I would love to go to a meeting and talk about what's really happening. The fact that the homicides aren't getting solved. The fact that, yes, there are things that aren't equitable. The fact that the DA's budget has gone up, and this is something nobody discussed tonight, has gone up 60% since Mr. Flaherty and his buddy, Mr. Sedita, took office, yet their cases have gone down 50%. Amazing. And nobody questions them about it. He asked for, when he took office, it was $10 million. Now it's $16 million. And the number of cases, and he asked for 17 this year. And the number of cases has gone down 50%. Now, you know, don't listen to him if he tries to take credit because, oh, well, the bottom line is how we could use the money towards more important things. And it's reprehensible that the DA's office is being run in a way in which they violate the law, they violate the grand jury, they lie to the Moss family. By the way, read the article again. They told the grand jury that the grand jury no-billed it. They didn't tell the grand jury about the fact that he went back in there. So the bottom line is I'd love to. I'd do it anytime. And I love talking.
Mr. Flaherty, would you prefer the 30 seconds with your 2 minutes or the 30 seconds now?
I'll wait.
Okay. Mr. Trainer.
Thank you. Thank you, Eva. Short and sweet, as I've said before, I'm a people person. I love interacting with folks. I'll go anywhere, anytime, you know, to talk to folks about any issue. Just ask. I'm more than happy to be there. And I'm used to being a 24/7 guy as well. So if for whatever reason the meeting has to take place, you know, late at night or whatever, that's never a problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trainer. Mr. Flaherty, your 2 minutes and your 30-second rebuttal to the personal attack.
Of course I'm open to that, and I already have appeared out many times in the community to introduce myself and talk to the citizens both on the east side of Buffalo, south Buffalo, all over the city of Buffalo, because it's important to me to learn from our residents what's important to the residents, what do they want to see out of my office. And I've learned from them, and I look forward to continuing to do just that. And as to our budget, I'll just throw this out there since it's one of the many personal attacks that we've received. I can say that, you know, before the red-green budget, we had 99 assistant district attorneys. We have 89 today, and they're not all funded from the county. So we could always use more bodies. You want to talk about more prosecutions? Give me more people, and we can do more. But we make the best with what we can do. We are a poor county, and I'm competing with other agencies out of the county. The trillion-dollar budget or the billion-dollar budget, you know, we get just over $16 million, but we're not complaining. We make do with the best that we can. I look forward to continuing to serve, continuing to meet, and continuing to do good work.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. That concludes our portion of questioning and answering, and it certainly has been a lively session. Now, the one-minute closing statements, starting with Mr. Sacha.
Thank you to the black journalists of Western New York or the Buffalo. If it wasn't for you holding this debate, people wouldn't have the chance to actually see who the candidates are. And I think there should be a applause.
Thank
for
you.
The organization.
Thank you.
And that's from the bottom of my heart, because I'm the outsider, okay? Even though I'm the one who for years worked his way up in the DA's office, had a successful career, held almost every supervisory job in the DA's office, supervised over 100 DAs, I was never political. And in the end, I paid for it because I tried to do the right thing. And Mr. Flaherty and his friend, Mr. Sedita, and his other friend fired me for it. And I am the best candidate for DA because of my integrity and my experience and my independence.
Thank you,
Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Sacha. Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, sir. As I alluded to in my opening statement, you know, I believe I am the best candidate for Erie County District Attorney. I believe that for three reasons, two of which I alluded to in my opening statement: my legal experience and my leadership abilities. I think the third reason is quite frankly most important, though, and that is my character and my integrity. I have served my country for the past 28 years in the United States Navy. I have served my community as a Tonawanda councilman and as a Tonawanda town judge, and now as a Tonawanda town attorney. I want to continue my service to the public and to the county by being your next DA. I believe in public service. I've done it my whole adult life. I want to continue to do it. And I'll leave you with this. The core values of the United States Navy are honor, courage, and commitment. I've lived my adult life by those core values. My wife and I instill those core values in our five children, and I promise each and every one of you, I will bring those core values to the DA's office.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Flaherty.
Thank you. It has been my privilege to serve our community over the last 20 years, or during, for 20 years as an assistant district attorney and the last 8 months as your district attorney. And I ask you, this is not just a job to me, it is a commitment, it is my passion, it is who I am. And I ask that you not judge me by what others say about me, but judge me by what I have done and what I am doing. You know, I am the only candidate with the experience, the temperament, and the commitment to serve as your district attorney. And I believe I have demonstrated that throughout the last 8 months, and I look forward to the next 4 years. I can promise you that I will continue to strive to improve diversity in the office, that I am fighting to protect our families. I can tell you that, despite what you've heard, the number of our open cases has risen dramatically over the past 8 months. The number of homicide convictions has gone up dramatically, and the number of opioid prosecutions is on the rise. Real work producing real results.
Thank you,
Mr. Flaherty. Count on your support.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Traynor, you get the last word.
Thank you. Integrity first, service before self, excellence in all we do. The core values of the United States Air Force. Those have been my core values my entire life, even before joining the Air Force. One thing that we haven't talked about tonight is one demonstration of my personal integrity is I am the candidate who is self-funding his campaign. I accept no contributions from anyone because I don't want to compromise or even have the perception of compromising the justice system. And that's why I am walking the talk. Apart from that, I had the opportunity to work in Washington, D.C., New York City, or any of the other places I had been assigned. I chose to come back to Buffalo because this is my home, this is where my friends are, this is where my parents are buried, and I couldn't think of a better place to come back to after serving for almost 3 decades our wonderful country. Now I want to serve our wonderful community. I have a servant's heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. That concludes our forum tonight on Meet the Candidates.